Thanks for tuning in to the Drive On podcast, where we are focused on giving hope and strength to the entire military community. Whether you're a veteran, active duty, guard, reserve, or a family member, this podcast will share inspirational stories and resources that are useful to you. I'm your host, Scott DeLucio, and now let's get on with the show. Hey everybody, welcome back to Drive On. I'm your host, Scott DeLucio, and today my guest is Marty Strong. Marty is a retired Navy SEAL officer and combat veteran who successfully made the transition from military to civilian life. And he's here today to talk about that transition and what it takes to succeed in life after the military. So welcome to the show, Marty. I'm glad to have you here.
Hi, Scott. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. For the listeners who maybe aren't familiar with you and your background, could you tell us a little bit more about yourself?
Sure. So I started in the square states, specifically Nebraska, and escape velocity for me was to join the Navy at the age of 17 to go out and see the world, as they say. And so at 17, I joined the Navy, became a radar and air traffic controller by education. I went through a 17-week course. At the end of that, instead of getting orders to a ship, which I was expecting, I got orders to underwater demolition SEAL training in California. So once I got there, they talked me into volunteering, and I ended up doing 20 years in the SEAL teams. After that, I managed money for United Bank of Switzerland and then got into government contracting as a business development executive. I'm an author and some other things. So that's kind of it in a nutshell.
So it's kind of interesting, and I wasn't in the Navy, so I don't know exactly how that works as far as getting into the SEAL teams. I know obviously you go through the, you know, BUDS and you go through that type of training, but from what I understand, and obviously based on what you're saying, this my understanding is not 100% correct here, but my understanding it's you know, a rather you know, intensive process even just to get to BUDS, but you're saying that they kind of just sent you off to that training and you kind of fell into that, it seems like, almost, right?
Yeah. So it was a while ago, and back in those days, it wasn't sophisticated. When I showed up at SEAL Team 2, there were 350 SEALs total, and that was about 3,500. We didn't have any admin support people. So, and the Navy, you know, wasn't concerned about the SEAL community. So it's very easy, I think, in hindsight, to see that they could have made a mistake. I took a test in boot camp that I thought was a swim and kind of PT test, but I thought it was for a sports event we were doing that weekend. And they got my name and social security number. And I figured that out years later when I went back as an instructor and found my records. It kind of patched it all together. But yeah, it was a mistake.
It's so interesting how all that works out. And, you know, it works out. And in this case, it worked out for the best, right? You ended up having a 20-year career. You don't have a 20-year career doing something that you absolutely are miserable and absolutely hate doing. You know, it doesn't work out always that way. But you know, it seems like you got into something that you were good at, enjoyed doing at least, and you know, had some fun along the way, I'm imagining, right?
I believe so. I taught a class a long time ago in a nonprofit for single mothers that were trying to learn how to get jobs and all those things. And my class was called Nonlinear Success. And it was essentially, I write books on strategy, and I was having, you know, those days I was confessing that everything I thought I was going to do, I ended up doing something completely different, but it worked out. So in this case, the SEAL teams was one of those examples.
Yeah. And it's always interesting to hear people's career paths and how they get to where they're going. And it's not always like the path that they started off on. You know, even they go to school to study one thing, and then they end up doing something completely different with their life later on. You know, it's just, you know, finding yourself along the way and taking advantage of the opportunities that present themselves. And I think that's probably a key point that we might touch on a little bit later in this episode. But I want to take a quick second here to cut to a quick commercial break. When we get back, we'll get more into this and your journey to through the SEALs and later on into your civilian career. So stay tuned.
Attention military veterans and families. Are you ready to conquer the civilian job market? Monster Resume Writing Service is here to support your transition. Their team of certified resume writers specializes in helping veterans like you. They'll create a custom resume that highlights your military experience, translating it into a language that civilian employers understand. They understand the unique challenges you face, from navigating career shifts to finding the right opportunities. That's why their experts will tailor your resume to your specific career goals, ensuring that you stand out from the competition. They optimize your resume with keywords to match job postings and pass recruiters' screening software. Monster Resume Writing Service is dedicated to helping you succeed. Visit the link in this episode's show notes to learn more about how they can help you take the next step in your civilian career.
So, Marty, one of the things that I found that veterans have trouble with is how to apply their military service, the things that they did while they were serving, to the civilian job market when they get out. And I want to take a little bit of time today to discuss how you're able to identify and leverage some of the transferable skills, some of the things that you did while you're serving in the military, that you know, those skills that you acquired during that time period, and how you're able to apply that to what you're doing after you got out of the military and were looking for that first job or whatever it was that you were doing after you first got out.
So I found it over time, giving classes and talking to people, individuals trying to transition, not just from the SEAL teams, but from the military in general, that it's a much, much more complex psychological situation than I initially appreciated, both in myself, but definitely in people in general. And that's because when you join the military, fill in the blank, for whatever reason, it may not be for the reasons that you would go do something new once you leave the military. So if you did it to get away, like in my case, to get away from kind of a boring state and a bad home life and all that. Okay. So if you're 10 years, 8 years, 20 years later, do you still have a bad home life? You know, your parents aren't the problem anymore. Where you grew up isn't the problem anymore. So it's not like you can run away from the thing that got you into the military, because you've achieved whatever you were trying to do by joining the military. If you were trying to get a degree in the military, if you were trying to see the world, if you were trying to get a particular vocational skill and you've achieved it, all right, you've achieved it. So it's kind of like being at your end of your junior year and everybody's asking you, what are you going to do? Where are you going to go to college, whatever? Or at the end of college, where are you going to get, where's your job? Do you have any offers or whatever? Those are threshold events for, you know, for early adult and maturing adults that are terrified, because pretty much everybody I've talked to is like this, of what's going to happen and whether the path they pick and the fork in the road that they take is going to be all the things it's supposed to be, which is, you know, uber success, security, financial, you know, rewards, upward mobility, constantly growing intellectually, blah, blah, blah. And of course, that's not the way the world or the universe is structured. It's not that way. It's not a movie. So, you know, to answer your question more specifically, what I've kind of come down to is you have to decide what you want to do in your next life. You have to kind of think, what do I want to be? What do I want to do? What would I love to do? What do I like to do? Not because I'm running away from something, but what would make me happy and what would really kind of float my boat? Do I want to run a fishing lodge? Do I want to, you know, become a forest ranger? Do I want to start a restaurant? All these things. Now, this is kind of counterintuitive because, and nobody said this to us when I was in the Navy in the early days, you basically, your jobs were go out and be a cop or, you know, go work for your family. I mean, there weren't a whole lot of transferable skills from being a SEAL operator to anything else in the universe. So, and nobody was giving us any hints. So you have to kind of decide, you know, and I suggest to everybody do this, you know, a year to 18 months before you think you might be getting out. What do I want to do next? Now, if you were sitting there as a high school junior and you said, I want to be a doctor, I want to be an engineer, you could go find that path. You could find the certifications, the educational requirements, et cetera. And you could actually lay out the milestones and start as a junior and plot your way, you know, from the colleges that might have the programs you want to get into, all the way through certifications, et cetera. You've got to treat it like that. So, you know, first figure out what you think you want to do next. It's not what you want to do forever. And I've been around long enough to tell you, you can be in three or four professions you know, easy and be successful and happy in all of them. And then it's time to move on because you've done what you wanted sure. to do and accomplish. So that, and then building a battle plan. If you want to get into a restaurant business, you don't know anything about restaurants. Maybe it is you apprentice yourself and you go out and you get a job in a restaurant on the weekends, even while you're in the military, and you watch and you take notes and you create a journal and you ask the owner if he'd be willing to answer questions, and you learn how the money side works and supply chain, food, all that kind of stuff. You know, you got to immerse yourself and start out as an apprentice, just like you did at the first day in the military.
Yeah. And I think that's a key point there is that when you're in the military, if you're coming in straight out of high school, you really don't have very many skills going into it. You learn everything as you go along, and which means that you're coachable or trainable. You have the ability to learn new things. And so just because, you know, I was an infantryman, you were a SEAL, probably similar career paths were provided to us, you know, as far as, you know, you could be a cop and, you know, there's not much else outside of that where, you know, kicking in doors is really going to be applicable. And, you know, you have to kind of look at it like, okay, maybe those particular sets of skills, you know, kicking in doors, marksmanship, that type of stuff is not going to be applicable in a conference room. Actually, I hope it's not applicable in the conference room that you find yourself in. But, you know, it may be that you need to go and find what is that next path? How do I get to where I need to be? And take the right classes or talk to the right people, get that job, like you said, you know, get a job at a restaurant and kind of learn the ropes from the ground floor up. So that way you can do those things going forward. You know, so I think that's a key point there is that we are trainable. And, you know, like we were saying earlier, you may not end up in the place where you thought you were, but you can kind of take advantage of those opportunities as they come along. You know, in your case, becoming a Navy SEAL wasn't on the radar when you first enlisted, but here you are all these years later and you had, you know, that under your belt. So, you know, that is something I think that's important as well. Just kind of keep your eye out to those potential opportunities that are out there. Right.
Right. And you're not going to have the vocational technical skills in most cases, but what you will have, and this goes to the second part of your original question, is you're going to have attributes and characteristics of behavior, traits, habits, disciplines that a lot of people outside of uniform do not have. So, sure. You know, you're going to show up, you know, show up on time. You're going to show up prepared. You're going to have a certain sense of personal pride and also mission focus and mission team pride. You're going to affiliate yourself and associate yourself with the greater good of the organization you're with automatically day one. And as you said, you're trainable, but as you start to get into, okay, so you're, you know, if you were an 11 Bravo infantryman and you learned how to do basic planning, contingency planning, stress management, and you said, you know, kick doors. Well, basically what I said before is you're kicking doors in when you decide I'm going to go down a path that I'm not specifically trained in or certified to do. Every single one of those threshold milestone prerequisites is a door you got to kick in. And metaphorically, it's the same mindset. You don't just run down the street and just throw yourself at a door. You prep, you stage, you get other people to help you with it. You plan, you time it, and you do it right. It's the same exact thing. But you have to learn how to bake the bread a little bit before you can start applying all these other base characteristics that you have. Because once you learn how to bake the bread, once you learn a little bit about the thing you're going into, especially if you go into a company, you will become a force multiplier like you wouldn't believe, because you will shine, but you have to be able to contribute. And if you don't know where widget one goes and where widget three goes, nobody really cares what your leadership skills are. Once you understand all that stuff and there's a problem, your leadership skills kick in and everybody looks at you and goes, oh, look, somebody's actually trying to solve the problem instead of just brief me on the problem.
Sure. Yeah, and that's a good point. That being able to you know, kind of apply some of those characteristics, some of those things that you know like you said, kicking in doors is not going to be applicable, but the planning, the resources, everything that goes into it, it is a thing that is applicable. And, you know, if you can use those skills going forward, you know, how do you think that your military background in the SEALs kind of shaped your leadership style and your approach to that type of stuff in the business world now that you're in that area?
Well, I've touched on a couple of the behavior traits that I certainly didn't have them when I was 17 and I was showing up in Coronado wondering what the heck was going on. Some of them were developed as a foundational personality trait. A lot of them, most of them, were developed by people teaching and showing and training and mentoring and coaching, because a lot of them, the things like making decisions and being able to think, you know, kind of zoom out and also zoom in to be able to change direction, but do it in a very contingent, methodical way. It, just because you have 60 seconds to change the plan doesn't mean you just go, you know, oh, the hell, let's just go. You still think, okay, I've got, what's the three-step, you know, what's my three-step plan? I got to tell 10 guys what we're going to do, right? So you're able to compress, expand thinking, decision-making, judgment behaviors, planning, and all those things for the SEALs are definitely in spades. So that stuff has really, really held its value for me in the commercial world. I mean, an incredible leg up or an advantage, if you will.
Right. And just like in the military plans, you may have a perfectly planned mission in the military, but then this one thing happens and it kind of blows the whole plan up. That happens in the business world. It happens in, you know, any organization you might be in, where things happen. You know, it could be a weather related thing. It could just be a supplier, you know, doesn't deliver stuff on time or to the right place or whatever. And you have to kind of adapt to the situation. And, you know, having that practice, having planned for contingencies and things like that in the military, I think gives you that leg up over the people who maybe didn't have that experience and who might otherwise just, like you said, just kind of throw their hands up and be like, I don't know what to do anymore. And they just panic and they freak out on that type of situation. So yeah, definitely having that experience, I think, is certainly beneficial. We're going to take another quick commercial break here. When we get back, we're going to talk about some advice for people who might be struggling during this transition period coming out of the military. So stay tuned.
The Hero Company is more than just a brand. It's a force of change. As a veteran-owned and operated company, they stand shoulder to shoulder with our brave servicemen and women. Their mission is to help provide service dogs for veterans suffering from PTSD, all at zero cost to them. Every purchase you make from The Hero Company helps fund this crucial initiative. They offer a wide range of products, including jewelry, apparel, keychains, stickers and decals, dog collars, and everyday carry items. It's a chance to wear your support and make a tangible difference. To date, The Hero Company has raised over $1.2 million, but their fight continues. Their goal is to raise $10 million to ensure veterans in need receive the service and companion animals that can change their lives. By buying from The Hero Company, you're not just making a purchase, you're intentionally being a hero for our heroes who need our help now. Join the mission. Visit this episode's show notes or theherocompany.co/driveon to shop and support our veterans. Together, we can make a heroic impact and honor those who fought for us.
Marty, I want to talk a little bit about that transition period where, you know, people may have, you know, already gone through some of the planning steps that we talked about before, kind of identifying that the next opportunity for them after leaving the military. But they may just be struggling to find something that is meaningful. Obviously, military service is very meaningful. You're serving your country. You're, you know, like you said, there's other reasons that people join the military, getting out away from bad situations or traveling to see the world, getting, you know, all those types of things under their belt. But they may just be struggling to find that meaningful employment or even just struggling to bridge the gap between the military and civilian careers altogether. Do you have any advice for those people who just might be struggling in that sense?
Well, the advice I gave my oldest son, who was getting ready to join the Air Force at the moment of this discussion, he wanted to be a race car driver. And I said, trying to become a race car, like NASCAR, trying to become a NASCAR driver, you know, all the years, all this other stuff. He was doing track racing and it was in his blood. And I said, but he wanted to join the Air Force, wanted to join the service. So I said, well, think of it this way. Just have a binary set of objectives here. Join the Air Force, get into satellite communications, all the things he wanted to do. Have that pay for you to race as a hobby. So what you love to do, what really, you know, makes you happy, it'll be funded by something that's actually paying the bills, but also teaching you other skill sets. And so that's what he did. And, you know, he was stationed out in Utah and he was racing as often as he could. And so that's one way of looking at it. If, you know, and I get what you're saying. I know, especially in the special ops community, there's a lot of PTSD and suicides. And one of the things we all talk about amongst ourselves is the loss of a sense of brotherhood. But really what it comes down to is also the loss of a sense of purpose, because that's a really intense purpose. And the purpose is the brotherhood, and the brotherhood kind of is the purpose. When you get into it, and it's cliche, but when you get into it, you're really more concerned about showing your peers, the people that are with you in your unit, that you'll do your job, you'll contribute, and then if something goes wrong, you'll step up, you'll cover everybody's six, and you know everybody else is going to cover yours. And that intense kind of bond and expectation is a psychological thing that, and it's heavily emotional. It's all wrapped up. A lot of people don't get to that level in a regular job. And it would make no sense if they would. And you're not going to find it in a regular job. You're not going to go work in a Ford plant and suddenly find everybody ready to, you know, throw themselves on a grenade. To, you know, it's just not going to happen. It just isn't going to happen. So the first thing you have to do is just face that reality. Now, there are some jobs. Law enforcement's one of them. And there's kinetic parts of law enforcement that are a little bit more adventurous and violent in nature, and you can evolve into that. You can learn how to be a helicopter pilot, be a medevac pilot. You can learn to be an EMT. You can be an EMT volunteering on the weekends while you have a regular job, if that's what you want to do. You can get into a nonprofit with veterans and help other veterans to do transitioning while you have a day job. I think the fallacy that sets everybody up for a sense of either failure or kind of fatigue of trying to achieve something that they think they're supposed to achieve is happiness isn't a dollar number. Happiness is doing something that gives you a sense of purpose. And if you can't get paid enough to pay your bills, doing something that gives you that sense of purpose, get a job to pay your bills, and then take the rest of your time and focus on that sense of purpose. If it is doing things for other people, if it's moving the needle to help others, if it's helping veterans, if it's helping your family, whatever it is, don't see life as black and white. It's both blended. And it's the same thing if you wanted to become, you know, if you want to apprentice and say you want to own a restaurant, and you can go out and you can get a job as an IT specialist because that's what you did in the military, but you really want to own a restaurant. Fine. On the weekends, have a restaurant job, study, talk to people that own restaurants, learn everything about the restaurant business. Get a degree, you know, or a program that you can get in to teach you about restaurants while you're working the IT job. Use the one as the funding mechanism and platform to give you enough time to accomplish all those things we talked about in the earlier segment. You know, the goal setting and then the targeting of the various milestones and metrics, little baby steps all the way to the end. And then once you get there and you're happy, 6-7 years later, you may say, you know what? I want to be an astronaut. Okay, so then you got a whole new plan.
Right, and that's a good point, because those plans will likely change over time. They may not. You know, you may find that one thing and you just stick with it for the rest of your career or the rest of your life, whatever time period we're talking about. But you know, a lot of times people, their interests change, the sense of purpose there, you know, they may find a bigger sense of purpose doing something else, and they may want to switch gears to doing whatever that thing may be. But yeah, it makes sense. Like, it may very well be that, you know, like your son, you gave that example that he likes racing cars, but if if he's not, you know, NASCAR level, you know, abilities in racing, and I don't know his skill level and whatnot, but if he's not at that level, then it may be, you know, very well that there's not a funding opportunity there for him. You know, it may just be a hobby type thing. And so, yeah, you have to find some other way to pay the bills, to put the food on the table and keep a roof over your head. And yeah, look at that as the thing that you do to fund the thing that you enjoy, or that gives you that sense of purpose and meaning, and you know, just makes you happy. So yeah, you're getting out of bed every morning to go fund that passion or that dream or whatever it is that you want to call it, right?
Yeah. So it's either the parallel track, like you just described, or it's the 1-2 step that I described earlier. That one is prepping you and giving you the breathing room to explore and get smarter and get whatever you need under your belt to make that next jump. And I tell people the same thing with jobs. I have 5 kids. I say the same thing. If you're miserable where you are, first off, any place where you work is a learning laboratory. You should be writing down a journal. You should be taking notes. Every bad boss, why is he bad? Why is she bad? Every good boss, why are they good or bad? Take notes, because in your 20s and then your 30s, you're going to forget all that stuff. And you actually were sitting there in either a crucible or a learning laboratory of whatever your profession was in. You're learning about human nature. You're learning about communications. You're learning about law. You're learning about all kinds of things, right? The way money works. Even if you don't like the job and you're looking for something else, squeeze every single bit of learning you can out of every single thing you do, because it all becomes applicable down the road. Maybe in some other thing you weren't ever thinking about 20 years from now, you're going to go, well, I'm glad I learned about that.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And that happens all the time. You get these, pick up these little nuggets and little pieces of information. It's just general life lessons. You pick those up along the way. But if you go into whatever it is that you're doing, that maybe you hate it, maybe it's just miserable for you, you don't want to go to this job, or you don't want to go to school, you don't want to do this stuff because it's just, you know, kicking your ass and you just don't want to do it. But you learn things along the way. And even there's something to learn about yourself in doing those things that are difficult. And, you know, talking to a Navy SEAL, I mean, that's probably one of the things that you learn just going through BUDS and all that training. It's not easy, but you probably learn some stuff about yourself doing that kind of stuff. And I can't imagine that you woke up every morning telling yourself, man, this is going to be a great, lovely day. You know, it's a hard thing, you know, that you're doing. And, but you're better off for it having gone through all of that. In talking about, you know, military service and some of the principles and the values that were instilled in you during your time in the military, and then transferring out to the corporate environment or the, you know, the civilian world in general, very often the civilian world doesn't share the same sets of values or principles that were instilled in us. Any advice for people who might be struggling to find that balance, between the maybe more collective group, supporting the group, the team, whatever it is that you were a part of, versus a more probably individualistic mindset that you find in the civilian world?
Well, first thing I say is lower your expectations, because it's a rare thing to find a commercial organization. You can find it in nonprofits, and a lot of nonprofits that are very mission focused. You know, they're sacrificing. Maybe they're not getting paid very much, but they want to do this, and so they don't care, but they're getting paid. But in general, that's not the way the world is going to be, you know, set up for you when you come out. Be happy that you've got these other traits. These are values that are they're very important, and they're critical and applicable in almost any situation. And I'd say a lot of non-military people have very strong values around lots of things, but it isn't necessarily the workplace environment. They may be willing to jump on a grenade for their family, but they're not willing to do that for their coworker.
Right.
And that's, so it doesn't mean as an individual that people in general don't have values that are as strong or nearly as strong as anything you'd see in the military. It's just that their goal and their mindset, their objectives are more focused on things that they understand, like their family and their health or if they're deeply into politics or deeply into religion or something like that, that's what they'll fight to the death over those issues. They're just not going to fight to the death over the parking lot, you know, what space they get in the parking lot, or, you know, there's not going to. And if you think about it, it's kind of ridiculous to expect anybody to do that. You know, they're not coming in to fight for God and country. They're coming in to work, you know, a 9-to-5 job and pay the bills so that their family's healthy and happy. Not so everybody in the business is healthy and happy. So once you kind of think it through, it makes a lot of sense.
It does, actually. And going back to what we were talking about before, how, you know, you can use whatever the career is, whatever your job is, to fund the thing that sparks your passion. It's the same thing for, you know, anybody else in the civilian world. They may have their own passions, whether it's, you know, fishing or, you know, whatever. And these are the things that they want to go do, and they want to go spend their time. They want to go take these trips and, you know, whatever it happens to be that they enjoy doing. They're there to basically fund that stuff, whatever their interest is. Maybe it's their family. Maybe it's something else in their community, whatever it is. And that's what they're there to do. They're maybe not going to jump on the grenade for the job, you know, the metaphorical grenade here, but they would for their family or whatever that passion is. So, I guess lowering your expectations, I think, is a good way to look at it. We're going to take another quick commercial break here. When we get back, we're going to talk about some strategies to navigate the job search and other insights and lessons that might be applicable here. So stay tuned.
This message is from the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs. Veterans service organizations, often known as VSOs, offer many services for veterans, service members, dependents, and survivors. Whether it's holding job fairs, finding solutions to challenges such as homelessness, healthcare, or financial issues, or educating veterans on federal, state, county, and local benefits, VSOs are a great resource for veterans. VSOs also offer veterans a place to socialize with other veterans for peer support. Plus, for help filing a claim or appeal, you may want to work with an accredited lawyer, a claims agent, or a VSO. VA trusts these professionals because they're certified in VA claim and appeal processes. To learn more, go to va.gov and search for VSOs.
So, Marty, I want to talk a little bit about, you know, as you're getting out or in that 6 to 18 month window before getting out of the military, were there any resources that were available to you or that you know of that are available now that you found helpful in navigating the job search or the whole career transition process as people are getting out?
There were very few. When I retired, the Navy had something that they called transition assistance program called TAPS. Basically, you know, how to wear a tie, how to put a suit on, how to fill out a resume, that kind of stuff. It was very, very short. The Navy in general has improved that. I think all the militaries have improved that. And the problem again is that if it's the psychology of, if you don't know what you want to do, you're sitting there in these service sponsored preparation clinics. And if you haven't been thinking about this for 18 months, you don't even know what questions to ask. And you're not sure how half the stuff that they're telling you is relevant because you don't really know how to match it up against anything. And you haven't been living on the outside.
Right.
So it's kind of like somebody telling you about what it's going to be like running around in the jungles of Borneo and why it's really important to do this, this, and that. You hear the words, but you've never been in the jungle of Borneo. You don't realize how critical those words are. I mean, they're either life and death, you know, pieces of information, or you'll get hurt, or you won't finish whatever you were going to do in Borneo. So that's what I see. Everybody comes out of the military and they get something like that. So the next step is there anything outside of the military? There's no one single organization, but I will tell you there are probably 2,000 veterans organizations out there right now. And the easiest way to, you know, because we have the ability to look it up on the internet, is to think of an association associated with what you did in the military. You can do it in a general way. So if you're in the Air Force, you're in the Marine Corps, you can look up the Marine Corps Association, Air Force Association, contact them. They have all kinds of, the alliances with all kinds of smaller organizations. What they do, these big associations, they act as integrators. That means that what they do is they collect up all these different capabilities. A group that works with veterans that are, you know, paraplegics or something. Another group that works with vocational education. Another group that helps them with entrepreneurial startup, you know, capital even. And they have these guys in this network. You ask, and once you've hit that kind of the mother load of that service-oriented association, they can start pointing where you need to go. Again, though, the first thing you're going to say is, well, what do you want to do? You know, and if what's it Yogi Berra said, if any direction is as good as any other direction, then take it kind of thing. It's just, if you don't have a plan, you don't have a plan, you don't have a plan. And everybody's going to want to help you. And they're going to say, what do you want to do? If you specifically said, I want to learn how to scuba dive, and then I want to go down to the Keys, and I want to eventually get to where I'm taking people out on scuba trips. That's pretty specific, right? Sounds like right. An aspirational goal. It's not just a money goal. They can link you up with veterans that do free scuba training. We'll set you up with that. They may know veterans in Florida that are doing scuba deals with disabled veterans. There's a ton of them all through the Gulf and the Florida Keys and everything. Next thing you know, you've got a contact with them. You're down there working after you get scuba qualified, and now you're making contacts on other boats. Now you're working on a boat as a scuba instructor, and you see where I'm going with this. You have to have some kind of an idea. So if you start 18 months early, you could be calling these people 18 months early. You could be test driving all kinds of different things. And you can be establishing your own networks and your own Rolodex, essentially, of points of contact and organizations that are 2, 3, 4, 5 levels down, because they start getting smaller and smaller, but more specific. And most of them are funded. There's lots of grant money out there. So they will do a lot of things you wouldn't expect them to do to help veterans. So that's the easiest way to tap in.
Yeah. So I think, that's a good point, is contacting these organizations, because from the conversations I've had with other people who gone through the similar TAPS program or other programs like that, sometimes it's like drinking from a fire hose. There's just so much information coming at you. And like you said, it's not relevant until you've started thinking about what it is that you actually need to know and why you need to know it. And when you're just sitting there in a classroom and they're telling you this information, you're not connecting the dots necessarily as to why are they even telling me this stuff? Why do I need to know this? And it's just not sinking in. And you know, once you're out and you're in the thick of it, then that's when those questions start coming up, and then the relevancy starts coming up. But then you're thinking back to 6 months, a year ago, when you were sitting in that classroom and you're like, okay, what did they say about this? And you know, so yeah, finding these organizations that can help you make those connections, or you know, even just help you in other ways afterwards, I think is definitely a good point that you made there.
Let me add one more thing. If you didn't miss the train if you didn't start 18 months early. You start when you start, and if you know 20 days before you get out, you suddenly realize you're getting out, and you step out, get that job. And do the same process. Get whatever you're going to do out there, work in a shoe store, work at a gas station, whatever you're going to do, and start that process of contacting all those associations and everything. Don't think that you're missing something by not starting early. You can do this. I had a session with a bunch of Naval Academy graduates, and I asked a bunch of them, I said, well, how many years does it take to become an engineer? It was 4 years. How many years does it take to become a doctor? How many years does it take to be a lawyer? How many years does it take to do this? And how old is everybody? They're like 38, 41, 42. They're all getting ready to get out. And I said, okay, so you're 42. How old are you going to be when you finish your engineering degree and become an engineer? Well, 46. Okay, I get it. Age is nothing. You got to put in the time, but you got to think about what you want to do. And most of these qualifications and certifications are 24 months. I mean, it's they're very, very short. I think it's like 24 months to, if you want to become a computer programmer. And you can do that at any age. And it pays real well.
Right. Yeah, and that's true. Yeah, I think that there's a saying, you know, when's a, you know, the best time to plant a tree? And it's like, well, you know, 2 years ago was the best time, but the next best time is right now. And so similar to what you're saying is, you know, maybe you didn't start planning 18 months out. And some people don't even have that luxury. Maybe they're getting medically retired from the military and this is unexpected. And something happens and, you know, next month you're no longer in the military. It's over. And now you have to figure out what you're doing next. Well, now is the time to start thinking about it. Whatever, as a matter of fact, whatever stage you're in, now is the time to just start thinking about it. And even if you're getting out tomorrow, you know, figure that out. You know, get a job, get something now. It may not be perfect. It may not be where you want to be 5-10 years from now, but get something just to pay the bills for now and start working on those connections and making those steps towards whatever the end goal is for you. And the end goal, I think it's also important to think about as sort of a moving target, because you may achieve something, you know, becoming a doctor or becoming an engineer or some other career. And you may find out 5-10 years later, that's not where I want to be anymore. And I want to switch gears and move to something else. There's nothing wrong with that either. But again, I think you need to have that plan to get to whatever that next thing is. So that way you're not just, you know, struggling to, you know, figure out how do I get there? And then you haven't done anything to make any progress towards that. So you need to sort of plan that out. Just as if you were a junior in high school, you know, what are you going to do next? You're going to go to college. You're going to, you know, get an internship, an apprenticeship or whatever, and learn whatever it is that you need to do. You know, all of those things are equally as important to a 17, 18 year old kid as it is to a 45 year old adult, you know?
Yeah. Add one thing just to give you an idea, just how many resources are out there. So I do work with the Navy for the SEAL Veterans Foundation. All of my novel proceeds go to them as a donation. So I'm in there talking to them all the time. And one day they were talking about grants and market share. And I go, well, what do you mean? You guys are fighting for grants? Well, yeah, there's over 250 nonprofit veteran organizations that have been started by SEALs or are focused on SEALs. 250 separate organizations. And they're all fighting for the same money, basically. They're all fighting for the same focus. Yep. So, yeah, I mean, there's probably five times that many for the Marines. You know, that's just because they're the Marines. They do stuff like that all the time.
Sure. Yeah, and that's true, too. There's so many, you know, different things out there, you know, different resources, different, you know, areas to kind of look at. You mentioned your novel and the sales of that. And I want to give you a chance to kind of talk a little bit about that and, you know, maybe give some information on that for the listeners who might be interested in learning a little bit more about what you've written about and what you do there, too.
Sure. So I've got 9 novels, a 4-book set that's a time travel series called The Time Warrior Sagas. And the other is a 5-novel series. It's the SEAL Strike series. It's SEAL missions and things like that. All the proceeds go to the SEAL Veterans Foundation, specifically for a program that deals with PTSD and traumatic brain injury. So when I wrote the first book, I thought, well, this would be really a nice thing. I'll just give the proceeds. I had no idea I was going to write 8 more. but yeah, so, you know, I like doing that. And it does, you know, does give a lot of funding support to that one program. The other 2 books that I have out are business books, and they're related to my consulting and things like that. And I keep all the proceeds for myself because I'm a veteran too. I need some money at some time.
That's true. And writing that many books is a lot of work. You do deserve to get a paycheck for those, every once in a while. And it, the way you described that, you wrote the one book, had no idea that there were going to be that many more to follow. It sounds like, when I talk to people who get tattoos, it's almost like, they get the one tattoo and then it's like, you a blink of an eye, you have, five more tattoos, and it's like, I didn't think I was going to have that many after all this, right?
Well, it was kind of my version of being a NASCAR driver. I didn't realize how much I was going to enjoy it. And then they were really well, the first one was really well received and sold real well. And I'm like, wow, okay, I think I'll try this again. By about the third or fourth ones, when my wife said, so do all the proceeds from all these books I go, yeah, I'm on record. I can't say, every other one or, or odd number books are going to be for this. And
that's funny.
So I enjoy doing that, and it keeps me connected with the foundation, but,
Yeah, no, that's awesome. Well, we are going to take another quick break. So stay tuned.
Calling all passionate patriots. The Patriot Box is a testament to our love for this great nation we call home. Founded by veterans, they believe in celebrating the values that built America: courage, imagination, and unrelenting determination. The Patriot Box curates hand-selected boxes packed with useful, fun, and delightful American-made products carefully chosen to honor our forefathers and embody the spirit of our nation. Join Patriot Box's community of compatriots and receive your very own Patriot Box, a treasure chest of proudly American-made goods delivered right to your doorstep. Each box represents a celebration of American craftsmanship supporting local small businesses that embody the spirit of passionate entrepreneurs across the country. But it doesn't stop there. With every Patriot Box purchased, you're also making a difference. A portion of the proceeds goes to support veteran charities honoring those who have served our country. Join them in embracing the pride of living in the greatest country on earth. Visit the link in our show notes to learn more and get your own Patriot Box delivered with pride.
Marty, it's been really great having you on the show and chatting about just your point of view on this career transition period that basically everybody getting out of the military is going to face at one point or another, whether they've already gone through it or they are going to be going through it in the near future. Do you have any other advice or any other information for the listeners that might be in that process right now, transitioning out of the military, or even have been in that process, but just are looking to shake things up a little bit?
Reach out to your own personal network. Find people that have been in the service and have left the service. It doesn't have to be in the last month or last year. It doesn't necessarily have to be in the same service you were in. I talk to people from all the services, and it just, what happens is once you kind of talk to one, people know that you're going to talk, you're willing to talk, and everyone's got a different life story. Everybody's got a different reason for getting in. Everybody's got a different reason for getting out. And I have the same conversation, pretty much the dialogue that we've been going through in the show here. And sometimes it clicks, sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes I find out a year later, they went a different path and then they realize that's not really where they wanted to be. So that's one thing, trust the process, but reach out to everybody you can and get all the insights you can, because you're an apprentice in this process too, let alone whatever new vocation or profession you're going to jump into. The other thing is you've left the military with something that most people don't have unless they've had a really hard life. That's both intellectual and psychological resiliency. You have been taught, trained to go without sleep, to sleep in crappy places, to not get enough food, to move under your own physical strength, vast distances, to be really, really cold, really, really hot, and in some cases be shot at. And you've been forged into a different kind of human being. And there are others out there that weren't in the military like you, but not in the same concentration. So trust those behaviors that you learned, trust those traits that you've absorbed over the time in the service. They're going to get you across the finish line over and over and over again, as long as you just trust to that.
Great advice. I think that's a really, a good way to look at it. Good point of view there. For the listeners who maybe want to find out a little bit more about your books or the foundation that you were talking about earlier, where can people go to get in touch, get a copy of your books, things like that?
So you can go to my website, MartyStrongBeNimble.com, and there's links at the bottom of the homepage to both my business books and those novels I was talking about earlier. I'm also like on the first 13 pages or something, when you just Google Marty Strong, it's got all my interviews and access to the same kind of information, books, things like that. So that's the easiest way, MartyStrongBeNimble.com.
Okay, awesome. And so I'll have links to that in the show notes for anyone who's looking to get in touch or to check out those books, things along those lines, want to find out a little bit more about you. Marty, it's been a pleasure having you on, chatting about this, this topic. I think is super important. A lot of people struggle with that transition. And you clearly have transitioned and, done it successfully. So, hearing your point of view, I think is going to definitely be helpful and beneficial to the listeners out there who are in a similar situation. So thank you again for taking the time to come on.
I have thoroughly enjoyed it, Scott. Thank you.
You bet. Thanks for listening to the Drive On Podcast. If you want to support the show, please check out Scott's book, Surviving Sun, on Amazon. All of the sales from that book go directly back into this podcast and work to help veterans in need. You can also follow the Drive On Podcast on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, YouTube, and wherever you listen to podcasts.